three shiurim, but fortunately, because of the complexity of the material and the excellence of the presentation, we asked Rabbi Willig to give you the fourth shiur to hopefully complete a little bit more on his agenda. Also, before I forget, I want to wish him a tzeis kadam l'shalom. I understand he's leaving Motzei Shabbos to visit his sons who are learning in Eretz Yisrael. And just one word, if I could have a moment. In this sedra that we shall read this coming Shabbos, after the Shira and after the Maisa with the bitter water that Moshe sweetens, Torah says, "Vayomer im shomoa tishma l'kol Hashem alokecha v'hayosha be'enov ta'aseh." If you will listen to God's voice and you will do what is right in His eyes, v'hazanta l'mitzvosav, and you will listen to His mitzvos, v'shamata kol chukav, kol hamachlo shesamti b'mitzrayim lo osim olecha ki ani Hashem rofecha. That all the illness that befell you, that visited you in Israel and Egypt, will not recur, because I am God, your healer. Rashi explains pshat in this pasuk via a mashal of a doctor who basically practices preventive medicine, and he said basically that Torah is that form of preventive medicine, that if you take Torah in full dose, then it prevents a lot of machlos. Then it prevents a lot of machlos. Spiritual, and I think also he would say psychological and emotional and physical ones also. And just by way of saying thank you, not being totally facetious or sarcastic, we'd like to grant you an honorary doctorate, if you will, okay, for the Torah that you taught us, and for the remedy that you have given us. Thank you.
That was a nice way to be greeted with an honorary doctorate. Let's begin today by a brief review of what we discussed the first three times to understand what caused this fourth Shia to exist. It's because we were not able to complete the agenda in three times, and I will tell you a secret. We will not be able to complete it totally in four, and I'm not speaking a fifth, because it can't end up so. But we began with a general overview in terms of relationships between men and women. And then we got into some of the details last two sessions concerning the laws of modesty in terms of dress. What exactly are the requirements? Are they objective or are they subjective? Can they change with the times? We discussed many proofs back and forth about this matter. And then we move to the next piece. The entire series, if you will, can be summed up by the Talmudic passage in Masechta Brachos on Daf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph. We moved from what we called Tefach B'Sherva and Shol B'Sherva. We discussed at length why you needed the second category once you have the first. We moved to Seir B'Sherva. We spent a lot of time last shiur. What exactly this means, different levels, different details. Went through many of the various important halachic facts concerning that important did. There's only one line left in this Gemara, which we will discuss, and then perhaps we'll discuss more general matters, time allows. One line which says, Amar Shmuel, Kol b'isha erva, shenema ki kolech orev umarech novim. The sound of a woman's voice is erva. It's considered something which constitutes a problem in our context with respect to Kriya Shema, which means, according to the simple reading of the Talmudic text, that if a person wants to recite the Shema, he should make sure that a woman is not singing, doesn't hear a woman's voice. As it says in the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Ki kolech orev umarech nov, that your voice is beautiful, and this itself, Kikolev Orev, is the source for the law of Kol B'Isha Erev. Now, a couple of important points to note. First, the Shulchan Aruch has a very remarkable expression. In Sif Gimel, it says, Yesh li zoyer mishmias kol zemer isha b'shas kriyashma. It's a good idea to be careful and not to hear the voice of a woman singing during the Kriya Shema. Why the expression Yesh Li Zoya? What kind of expression is that? They should say it's prohibited, period. The answer is that is a matter of controversy. And perhaps you can give me a Gemara Derif, if you have, where this matter is not universally accepted. There's a controversy whether it applies to the Kriya Shema, or perhaps Kol the Isha Erva is not halacha with respect to Kriya Shema at all. The Rush begins discussing this matter, and he says, Pirish Lishmoa, Lishmoa, V'lo Le'inyan Kriya Shema. The Rush said that this has nothing to do whatsoever with Kriya Shema. Kol the Isha Erva is a prohibition. A man may not hear the singing voice of a woman, but it has absolutely nothing to do with Kriya Shema. What does that mean? Nothing with Kriya Shema. It means it's a general prohibition. It's prohibited when you say Shema, it's prohibited when you don't say Shema. So if that were the case, it really wouldn't belong at all in Aruch Chaim Siman Ayin Hey. It belongs in Eben Ezra Siman Chaf Aleph, where it's found. But since then everyone agrees with the Rosh, therefore the Shulchan Aruch says, Yesh li Zoher. And then the side it says, Mordechai b'shem Rabbeinu Hai u'shar poskim. In other words, in contradistinction to the Rosh says that Kol Isha Erev has absolutely nothing to do with Hilchos Kriya Shema. It belongs only in Eben Ezra, not in Aruch Chaim. Whereas the Mordechai's opinion, which is found in the back of the big Gemara, in the name of Rav Hai and others, is no. Kol the Isha Erva is relevant to the laws of Kriya Shema, and therefore it is found in Hilchos Kriya Shema. I mean, the obvious case is a man's own wife. Certainly a man is permitted to listen to his wife's singing voice, no doubt about it, but not during Kriya Shema. If she is singing, he should say, you know, he should walk into a different room if he wants to say the Shema, because the beauty of a voice will distract him. Presumably that's the reason. And he will not be able to concentrate on the Shema. This is a controversy. According to the Rosh, it would appear that there's no connection between Kriya Shema and Kol Isha. And it's a separate prohibition. There's no relevance to Shema. And if a man, presumably, would appear, would be listening to his wife's voice, then it would not constitute a problem with respect to Kriya Shema. And if another woman was singing, while it would be prohibited all the time, but it would not be a uniquely Kriya Shema problem, he'd be violating a prohibition when he's hearing, saying Kriya Shema, the same as the prohibition that he would violate if he were not saying Kriya Shema. This seems to be the controversy. Now, what exactly is the opinion of the Mordechai? We mentioned before, the Mordechai is quoting from Rav Hai Gaon concerning the issue of Kol Isha. So, this is as follows. This is in a Siman Pei in the Mordechai. Upirish Rav Hai Gaon to Kol Hani. What does Kol Hani mean? Tefach, Shok, Kol, all pertain to Kriya Shema. Therefore, you may not take Davar Shebekdusha B'Shmias Kol Shir Shalisha. But Ubavonoseinu Bein Ovde Kochavim Anu Yoshim Ve'Eis Lasas Lashem Eferu Tarasecha Hilkoch Ein Anu Nisarim Mi Lilmod B'Shmias Kol Shir Noshim Aramos. Which means that there could be non-Jewish women who were singing their various work songs, etc. And nevertheless, we would say the Shema, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to say the Shema. They sing straight for 3 hours, and you wouldn't be able to say the Shema. So we have a custom of saying the Shema despite the fact that this singing is going on. This is the machlokas. Let's repeat. The machlokas is Kol Isha a general prohibition which has nothing to do with Kriya Shema? It's prohibited all the time. And it's, when it's permissible, for example, your wife, it's permissible even when you're saying the Shema. Or no. Kol Isha is a special Kriya Shema problem. For example, your wife's voice, you're allowed to hear, but you can't hear while you're saying the Shema. That's the controversy. The Shulchan Aruch is not conclusive. It's yesh li zohar, you should be careful, but he doesn't take a firm stand. It's a machlokas rosh against the Mordechai. I say this because there were those who I believe misinterpreted the Mordechai. There were those who quoted this Mordechai in the following manner. I repeat the words. Pirush Avigo, the call hani le'inyan kriyashma, end quote. There were those who said, aha, aha, Rav Haigon said that the only time there exists a prohibition of Kol Isha is only when you're saying Krishna. But when you're walking in the street, or sitting down reading a newspaper, or watching a Broadway play, or an opera, etc., then it's no problem, because you're not saying Krishna. And I want to tell you that in certain places, policy was established based on this reading of the Mordechai. And to my mind, it's corruption. That's not what the Mordechai said. Mordechai said that these things pertain to Kriya Shema, meaning what? That is a special prohibition of Kol Isha with respect to Shema. One, in a case where it's permissible otherwise, such as one's own wife. And two, that perhaps the person is in the Yotze in the Shema when he is listening to a voice of a female singing while he's saying it. We discussed this, if you recall, last two times. There's a person in the Yotze in the Shema when there's a woman who's improperly dressed in his line of sight. Even b'diavad perhaps is not yotze. That's what he says. As opposed to the Rosh said it's a general rule. There's no particular Kriya Shema component. But to say that it's permissible when a person is not saying Shema, the Rosh certainly didn't say it, and the Mordechai also never meant that. So I want to point this out to you, but I think it's a misunderstanding of the Mordechai. And the Shulchan Aruch's opinion, which is quoted in Eben Ezer, that Kol Ish is a serious problem, is normative. That's how we accept the halacha, despite this, as I say, misinterpretation to my mind of this line in the Mordechai. That's why I asked you to bring me the big Gemara. I should read it to you and tell you my interpretation, which is in contradistinction to what I consider to be a misinterpretation. Fine. Now, let's get to some details, which are critical in terms of the entire understanding of this idea of Zemer Isha. First, to whom does it apply? To whom does it apply? Zemer Isha, oh, you gave it for an example of a wife, right? Well, listen carefully. Afilu Penuya, even a woman who's single. A woman who's single is not an Erva. Patient, we're not finished yet. Don't jump to conclusions.
Well, it might be
like Patience. Avol Shelo B'Shas Kriya Shema Shori. But not in the time of Kriya Shema, it is permissible. Ach? Shelo yichavein lehonos mizeh, kedei shelo yovol lidehirur. But he should not have intention to enjoy it, so he should not come to the hear. What does that mean? So Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva, what this means is as follows. People enjoy a woman's voice. People also can enjoy a man's voice. Chazonis. men's voices are very, very attractive. We enjoy them very much. You pay money to hear a male singer. So you can also hear a female singer the same way as you're hearing a male singer. You know, it's a good voice, and he's singing nice tunes, and it's snappy, and it's a beautiful tune. So you would enjoy the male, you would enjoy the female. If you just see it in that light, writes Rav Moshe, then it's mutter. But if you're mechaven lehonos, not because of from the tune, not from the way the entire presentation of the melody, because the female, that's not allowed. That's not allowed. And we discussed this earlier in terms of his stockless, if you recall. Looking at a woman, in some cases it's permissible, other cases it's prohibited because you're going to enjoy her looks, which is again a prohibition. Now, Zemer Eishes Ish, V'chein Kol Arayos, Lola Masel L'Shmoa, if she's married, it's prohibited, and here's the punchline. V'chein Pinuya Shehi Nida Michlal Arayosi. Upsulas didan kula b'cheskas nidasein b'sheagia lehem zman veses. There it goes. So there the Mishnah Berurah says that yes, he paskins a kol penuya tahora his mutter, but once she becomes nida, then she has the status of erva, and once again it's prohibited. On this basis, Rav Moshe has a tshuva, which he writes that you may have young ladies singing up till the age of 11. Till then, he's not worried about the Shah of Lidus. After 11, Rav Moshe says he shouldn't do it. And it's halacha l'maaseh. They do it, if I'm not mistaken, they do it in a number of schools where they sing up until that age. And as a matter of fact, I received a shout on the phone from one of my balabatim just a few days ago that his daughter was invited to be part of a singing performance. And his daughter is, I believe, 10 years old. And she was asked to perform. And she doesn't want to do it because, after all, Rabbi X's daughter said no. And so how she should be like a cow. I told her, okay, I understand where Rabbi X is coming from, but I think it's permissible based on the children of Moshe Feinstein. Okay, Rabbi, it's good enough for me. So I think she's going to sing. Where they sing? They're singing in the Citizen Center or something of that nature. Fine. What did Rabbi X think? It's one of two things. Either it was a political thing. You know, he can't afford to do it because, after all, it doesn't look good. Maybe they're afraid she's 11, she should be 11 and a half, 10 and a half, because you're on the line. Or he may have had the opinion, I don't know if he's such a big lamb than the Rabbi X, of the Cholkim who say that even Kol Pinuya Tahora is prohibited. The Mishnah Brura said that Shalobish has Kriya Shmashari, that's the Prima Godin, but it's against the Be'er Sheva. The Be'er Sheva disagrees. So let's review. There's a controversy, can a woman who is a unmarried woman who does not carry any prohibition of Nida, may she sing for you and me, for men? So the Mishnah Brura says yes, and the Be'er Sheva says no. What are they fighting about? What is this dispute? What are they arguing about? I'll tell you that I thought the Be'er Sheva at first glance should be right. What's the difference? Here the woman, let's say she's not, for argument's sake, she's not 10 years old. I'll give you a case. She could be 30 years old. What happened? I mean, what could be a case? I don't know. A woman, she was 30 years old, she went to the mikveh, right? And then, for argument's sake, let's say she got divorced. It's just creating a scenario. Maybe it's a little bit unlikely, but it could happen. Then she got divorced, and now she hasn't had a period, so she says she's now called Pinduya Tahora. She's 30 years old, 20 years old. So, why should that be permissible? Shouldn't that be just as attractive and as alluring and as arousing as anything else? If she's 11 and a half, so you can hear, all right, maybe you can argue the case. But there's some women who don't have a period till they're 15. So then she says she's 15 years old. And because she hasn't, then she's a Pinduya Tahora, so that's less attractive. What's going on? The man knows what kind of matzah she's in? Oh, what's happened? What's it all about? The Be'er Sheva would seem to be right. That if a woman's voice is alluring and attractive, as it says in Pesukei Kolech Arif, should be prohibited across the board. Who cares? Pinuya, Shesish, Tahora, Nida, what's the difference? So I believe the answer is as follows. The Gemara tells us, in the Masechta Megillah, I believe it is, that various women can seduce in various ways. And one way is Bekol. Bekol, the voice. The voice can be very alluring and very attractive. And therefore, it seems to me that the Mishnah Brura's opinion is that we're simply afraid that through the Kol Isha, it's going to lead to immorality. Znus. If this is the case, we can readily understand the distinction between a Tahora and a Nida, between a Pnuya and a Shesish. Because although marital relations between unmarried individuals is a prohibition, perhaps even a Torah prohibition, but it's not as serious as Arias, which is the Sakharis, which is much, much more severe. So therefore it stands to reason that where the rabbis, most post-consumed coalitions, they're Rabbanan, mind you, when the rabbis instituted this prohibition against hearing the voice of a woman, they only did it when they were afraid of a grievous violation of an Issa Erva. But when the Issa, if it were to be violated, would be what we call a lower level Issa, a lower level prohibition, then the rabbis did not feel it necessary to institute this rabbinical prohibition and safeguard, saying that kol isha erva. Therefore, if the woman is muteris, strictly speaking, to the man, he can marry her. He can marry her. No? So then, the rabbis never instituted the prohibition. That seems to be the opinion of the Mishnah Berurah, though he doesn't spell it out. Whereas the Be'er Shevels, no, it's attractive, and if it's prohibited under all circumstances. That's quite a fundamental distinction in terms of the very understanding of the Easter of Kol Be'isha Erev. Now, this could have certain practical ramifications as well, over and above the 11-year-old choir. Namely as follows. What about a situation where it's impossible that this hearing of the woman's voice would lead to immorality? It's impossible. How could it be? It's impossible. Let's talk first in abstract. So if it's an issue of it's alluring, it's attractive, it's arousing, it could lead to, I don't know, Sazer Levatola, which we spoke about some time back, or it could lead to some other things, then it doesn't matter. Who cares if even Mizana with this woman or not? It's irrelevant. But if it's a Zera, because then they come to an Isser, then if it's impossible, it's impossible. Let's go find cases where it could be impossible. Let's go slow. There are some possible who maintain that even a pre-recorded voice is subject to the prohibition of Kol Isha. We'll discuss this in a few minutes. There are some who maintain so. Now that's a good question. What about if you hear the voice of a recording artist who's no longer alive? No longer alive? So if the nature of the prohibition is because it's arousing, it doesn't make a difference. But if the nature of the prohibition is that you're afraid it's going to lead to an immoral act between the listener and this person, the person's dead. On this basis, there is a very interesting statement made in a sefer called Hatznei Lechas by Rabbi Ellison, Olav HaShalom, in which he suggests that perhaps this is the basis of the custom which existed in certain parts of Europe. In America, it's hard to bring rights to the customs, because the customs are often have very little basis. But apparently in certain parts of Europe, they would go to the opera. It would be Erlich HaYidin who would go to the opera. You're hearing the voice of this great opera soprano, soloist, star. How can you do that? So he writes in the sefer, perhaps they felt that they're sitting up in the balcony of some concert hall, and there's this soloist down on the stage as some star who mixes in totally different circles. It's not realistic to imagine that there's going to be any kind of contact at all, even to say hello, between the listener who bought tickets for $5 up on top and the performer on stage. It's just not shy, it's impossible. So he thinks maybe there are some individuals who felt this was accurate, and therefore they permitted opera or theater, etc., etc. Others might disagree. Even if they accept all the premises that we did so far, on the grounds that, where do you draw the line? Yeah. Where do you draw the line? How are you going to know where? So in this case, it's impossible. And what if there's a performance in a summer camp or a school where they'll say, oh, there's 1,000 people in there. Who's that? Yeah, but there we know very well that the stars are very approachable. All too approachable. To the average listener in the back row. It's hard to draw a line, so there's a low plug. Should never be done, which I feel is the proper way to go. We're just trying to find what we call a limud schus, find some justification for something which was done in many circles in Europe and certainly in the United States. Now, another possible difference could be in terms of what is being sung. What are you singing? There are authorities who maintain, if you look at the state chemet, he discusses the possibility that Kol Isha Erev is only referring to love songs, songs of romance, might be attractive to a particular male listener. However, if a woman is singing lullabies to sing a baby to sleep, or a work song, or things of this nature, which have no a chant of that, of the, something of that type would not be included in the prohibition. Certainly, writes the Sechemet, Shirei Kodesh might be excluded. Holy songs, Niris. Some want to bring a proof from this in the fact that they've been taught in the Gemara, Masechta Megillah, Hakol all of the minyan Shiva, Afilu Noshin. But even women could get an Aliyah. Now, though there's an Aliyah, didn't mean you break a broch. Aliyah meant you read from the Torah. And you read presumably with the Tamim, which is a trup, which is a kind of a song. Others have refuted the proof in a variety of ways. One is by saying that's exactly why it's not allowed. When they quote at Tzibur, some Rishonim say quote at Tzibur means Kol Yisharu. At least the Kolbo says that. Secondly, some say it's not a song, it's only a chant. Laning, it's not really a song. And third, some say it's Shirei Kodesh. Even if it's a song, it's a holy song, it's a Chumash. So these logical points have been raised in this context. And others say it's prohibited even in Shirei Kodesh. Why? One of two reasons. Either they maintain that the voice itself is alluring and attractive no matter what's being sung, or they feel it's low plug. We don't make any distinctions. Once again, we're going to know this is serious, not serious. We're going to draw the line. What about two voices at once? That's a famous discussion. Trei koli lo mishtame, some invoke. You can't hear two voices at once, the Gemara tells us in a few places. And as a matter of fact, there are some who quote the pasuk I believe is in this week's Haftarah, if I'm not mistaken, but correct me if I'm wrong. Vatosha Dvoro Borak Ben Avinoah. We have to be topical a little bit in the parasha. And how did Dvoro sing? Kol Isha. One could say it's called before the Vedic Zera of Kol Isha. One could say Vatosha means she said poetry. She doesn't have to be song. But others say, no, you see, Borak Ben Avinoam was sang with a duet, and you couldn't hear a voice alone, so Trey called it Lomishtan. And others say that's not true, because after all, the Gemara tells us, Aidi de Chavivi, if something is beloved to a person, he can hear it, even though it's Trey called it, the Gemara's about Megillah. So others counter and say, well, that's where you know it's Chavivi before you even hear it, because you know you want to hear the Megillah. Here, till you hear it, it's not Chavivi, and you're not going to hear it because you go back and forth about how you what you derive, if anything, from that pasuk in Shoftim, which we're going to read the Shabbos. Who'd you sing for? If you look at the verses in this week's parsha, you get the impression that Miriam sang for the women, and there were not any men there when she was singing. That's the impression you get from that. They were using instruments. Batan Lahem Miriam Shiu could have been in a tone of prose. It didn't have to be a singing voice. It's not clear. It's simple, and again, plus maybe the Xeric and afterwards. It's hard to really be concrete and conclusive proofs from these psukim.
There's another case of Polisha that you haven't mentioned, which was not implied in a choir, not individual voices.
That's what we're saying. Trey, Kali, Lo, Mishtami.
A man and a woman, you can tell the woman's voice.
Oh, true.
The whole choir.
True, that's true. You have 100 female voices singing at the same time. That would be better, undoubtedly, because there, you really, it's very, very hard to hear. And there are many authorities who say that a woman's choir singing 100 voices in a shot, you know, would be permissible on the grounds you can't discern any particular voice. And others say, what do you mean? I can hear this voice, I can pick it out. You know, this is back and forth in terms of this issue. There's a famous tshuva in the Sridi Eish. The original source of this is not well known. It's a Hassan Sofer, quoted by the Shtei Chemet, about this Trey Koli. But the Sridi Eish is a much more wide-ranging tshuva. I may have mentioned in the first year, and I don't recall exactly, it's so long ago, that he was asked in France, in post-war France, when assimilation was so rampant, it was unbelievable, and we have to save the youth. Can we make co-ed youth groups? Otherwise they're not going to come. And what can we do? His famous answer was, Eis Las Vashem, which means we have a right to sometimes go against the rules and regulations to save the people. And he suggests in that case, his mixed choirs, that was his major point of leniency, not the trade call. He didn't like that too much. He liked the fact that, you know, you have no choice in this world. So for those situations, they have no choice. But to say that it's an ideal, that it's a standard, is a different story entirely. And then you have to learn, you know, I should really make it as a general statement. We alluded to it a little bit last week with the hair covering, etc. Achshadara. Things are getting better in many areas. In other words, there are new horizons which we aim for in today's world in 1992, which we couldn't aim for in post-war Europe or post-war America. Then we're just trying to keep the people, to keep Shabbos. Was it an incredible battle, and they should drive to shul, right? They should keep kosher. You know, the Taras of Mishpacha, you have to fight those battles first. Now that those things have been still not won, far from won, there's still a tremendous amount of violations of all these things, even within our communities. But they've been established to a much greater extent than before. So we have to go to the next issue to try to, you know, to institute proper conduct. I mean, I don't have to tell you about mixed dancing, which we spoke about in the first year, that was very widespread, even in Orthodox synagogues. And it's been more or less not totally cut out in my memory. I'm not that old. I mean, I remember from my youth that the either was in, or the rabbi had to fight tooth and nail to keep it out. And now it's just sort of we're making progress. So to the fact that there was a choir with a solo with a duet in a previous generation does not mean we automatically should assume it's proper. Maybe in those years it was an es lasas. There was no alternative. But it's not proper. It shouldn't be done. And today we perhaps should take a stricter stand on this as well. This is as far as some of the details of Kol Yish Erev. One more point I want to just bring to your attention, an interesting point. The Ramah says, Afilu Vishto, which is during Shema, as we mentioned earlier. But he says, Avo, kol harogil bo eino erva. What does that mean? Kol harogil bo, a voice which is used to, is not erva. What do the words mean? So Mishnah Berurah says, Ratzel lomar, kevan sharogil bo lo yavle dehir. He's used to it. He doesn't think twice about it. Afilu meshesish. Doesn't matter. That's the Mishnah Berurah says. Kol haragil. Others say that what this really means, the Mishnah Berurah implies it a little bit. Afilu hachi, he says. Also lechave lehonas midibura, even from her speaking voice. Even a speaking voice to be problematic. And some interpret therefore this to mean, I will call a rugged, not to mean a singing voice that you're used to, but to mean a speaking voice. But a singing voice, even if you're used to it, doesn't make a difference. What does it depend upon? Well, we discussed in the previous shiurim. If it's you're used to something, perhaps it's no prohibition. We discussed it as far as dress. As far as the hair, last time the Aruch HaShulchan, and the dress of Divrei Chamud and Sefer Kuvit, this could be another manifestation of the same principle. Even a singing voice might be permissible if you're used to it. It's a simple reading of the Ramah. Those who reinterpret it to mean a speaking voice, they say, nah, there's no leniencies. It's objective error to hear the woman's voice singing. It's only a speaking voice. Speaking voice, is that obvious? Not so obvious. The Gemara says in Masechta Kiddushin, She'elas Shalom, a greeting, is a violation of Kol Yisher. Now, we don't assume they greeted using tombs. They said hello. So how could you say that a speaking voice should be considered Arab? I never understood this. I never understood it. Until one day I overheard from a source which I not identify, a lady saying hello. And you'll forgive me because I'm not a very good repeater of what I hear, but it went something like this. Hello. It was a hello, which was a hello. That was not just a plain, hello. That was a hello, which was meant to attract attention. So that's a hello, which shouldn't be, the male shouldn't be listening to. It's reminiscent to me of what we discussed once before in our shiur about the handshake. We spoke about the shaking of the hands, where Moshe is not so sure that it's permissible, even though what we call the Gia, Shaloba Derechiba, in an unaffectionate manner, is permissible. But Moshe writes, Koshal Ismael, because that's hard to rely on. I never understood. What's hard to rely on? Everyone, really, shake hands. That's what's the bit. Until I saw in a certain setting where they disallow any contact between teenage boys and girls, but they permitted handshakes. After all, I was considered, just a matter of being polite. You should have seen some of those handshakes. You saw how long they lasted and how this and that. You knew what Rav Moshe was talking about. I mentioned you that the Rav Zalzayin Gezunt, my Rebbe of Salvation, whatever, if it ever happened that you had to shake a lady's hand because you didn't want to embarrass her, he would give what we call the dead fish. The dead fish meant he would put out a limp hand and the woman would sort of shake it and then that was it. He wanted to make sure there was no no whatsoever. Others say it's a wrong way out. We can't even give a dead fish. And he maintained that that's clear that we're going to give Shalom B'derechim. It was just the circumstances, aside from the intentions, proved that there was not going to be any pleasure being felt under such circumstances. That was what he has compromised in this matter. But again, the Giyah Shalom B'derechim is permissible, as we see from the subways. The Moshe's famous subway children. Hang on the subway in Rosh Hashanah, squished together. He calls it the Giyah Shalom B'derechim, but in an unaffectionate manner, it's permissible. The question was, where draw the line? So, this therefore is a summation of some of the halachas pertaining to Kol V'Isha Erev. Now, in the few remaining moments, I'm supposed to speak about 5 other topics, which I don't think I'll even begin to get to, but let's just give some highlights, okay? And if there are any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them privately afterwards. I was asked to speak about a mechitz and shul. Now, I'll just give you an overview of some of the disputes that exist in this regard. There are 3 opinions among the Rabbonim as to what is the purpose of a mechitz. And I think you'll get a kick out of this. The Satmar Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, is a centrist. He has the middle view. Now listen to this. Well, now you'll hear, how could that be? The quote left-wing view, if I may use that expression, I don't mean it in a negative, is that of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He held that the purpose of a mechitz is not to prevent the men from looking at the women. No. The purpose is to prevent men from socializing with women in any public forum. And therefore he said it's enough to have a mechitz which is up to the shoulders, which is going to prevent social interaction, even though you're able to see in both directions over the mechitz. That's the left, we'll quote that, they'll quote left wing view for the moment, although we'll see them with those who are more left. In the right-wing view, with those who maintain that the purpose of a mechitza is to prevent the men from seeing the women and the women from seeing the men. And the Satmar Rebbe is a centrist. He says, no. The purpose of the mechitza is to prevent the men from seeing the women, but the women are permitted to see the men. So say, what's the basis for all this? Let's start with the most right-wing view. This is the Beferisher Yalkut Shimoni and Sefer Shmuel. Yalkut Shimoni and Sefer Shmuel comment on the verse which describes the meeting between Shaul HaMelech and the young ladies who were helping him find his way. If you recall the Pesukim, he was running here, he was when he became king, he was running after his donkey, that whole stuff. So he asked him, how do you get to a certain place? Where's the Navi? So there's a long, I don't know what word, I don't know how to say it. There's a long monologue that the lady is telling to Shaul HaMelech, if you go this way, and you go that way, and you go here, and you go there, and you turn there, and there, you'll be able to find what you want. The Mari asks in Brochus, and the Yaakov Shmuel asks to say to Shmuel, wow, why do they talk so much? Why do they talk so much? They just say, you go there, and that's all. They're giving a whole soliloquy, a whole monologue. Why all this talk? So the Gemara has a variety of opinions as to why so much talk. One of them is, it was an Hashkocha Pratis, because it wasn't yet Shaul's time to become king. It was Shmuel's time still to remain the leader. And Ein Malchus Lo Gatz V'Chaver Tekim Lo Nima. Famous Gemara, it's also in the Medrash, that you can't just take away from somebody else's kingdom, and therefore it's necessary to stall it off. Another one says that women sometimes are given to long statements. The pasuk says as follows: So why so much talk? Either because that's it, normal that way, or because a malchus nogas, or kidei leistakel biyofyo shel shol. Chsiv mishichma v'mala gavoh mikolah. They talked because that thing they wanted. They wanted to look at this show was tall, dark, and handsome. And they wanted, but they just couldn't look at it. It's the past. So they started talking. They're talking and looking and talking and talking and talking. They couldn't get enough of it. They kept talking. Said to the Yalkut Shimoni and that pasuk and say for Shmuel Aleph Perek Ches. B'chiasisem b'nos Yisrael kizona. Are you making the Jewish women into immoral women? That they were looking so long at Shaul so they could enjoy how he looked? This is the basis for those who we called before the right wing. That means you can't have an ability to see the women shouldn't see the men, just the men shouldn't be able to see the women. The Satmar Rebbe Zatzal answered, he says, it's true that opinion exists in the Medrash and Shmuel, but the Gemara and Brachos doesn't quote it. You have a rule. Whenever there's a machlok between the Gemara and the Medrash, we pass like the Gemara. So the Gemara says, no, the prohibition is one directional. What's the difference between men looking at women and looking at men? Oh, so this is a long story. I'm not going to go into all the details now. But clearly, the Rabbonim felt that it was considered a greater distraction for the men to look at the women and vice versa. This is due to a whole variety of reasons. The disposition in this area of women and men in terms of arousal, in terms of the results of it, in terms of which are different based on differences in anatomy, which we discussed in the previous shiurim, and there are differences. This is the Sapphire's Rebbe's approach, and Rav Moshe, it's all wrong. Tried to prove it in the Gemara Masechta Sukkah, complicated Gemara. And the purpose of the mechitz is just to prevent the socializing between women and men, not to prevent either seeing the other. He tries to prove from the fact that in the base of Shoev, which is the source, men could look up to the balcony and see the women. They made a balcony, if you know that. So they could see. So there's something Rabbi says, they wouldn't look back, it was up, it was down. There's a whole discussion of it. It's quoted in various sources.
According to the Gemara, they quoted that the women are talking a long time to girls because they can admire their beauty.
Right.
But in other places, it does mention fact about admiring. They may lay a rock on the rock, or how do you say a fast dollar of grass mark? For whom was that intended?
That was intended to describe a situation. That's all it was, to describe a situation.
But apparently, the reason I mentioned because she was attracted to people.
Undoubtedly. On that, the question is, what's the halacha? We know that the facts we know. The halacha that we're trying to find out. I'm not trying to say that there's no attraction of a beautiful woman. But on the contrary. On the contrary. In any event, I'm not one to decide among these three giants. I should add that there are those who have a mechitza which is lower than Rav Moshe's minimum amount. His minimum amount was, I believe, 60 inches, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, 5 feet, which he considered to be approximately shoulder height. Rav Moshe did say that he thinks maybe it could be partly glass or partly lattice work, because after all, it's not supposed to prevent the seeing. There are some shuls that have glass, and I'm not coming to argue because Rav Moshe is a Rav Guvre. All I'm saying, if you look carefully at Rav Moshe's tshuva, you get the impression from his tshuva, he says it beferish, there's no distinction between davening and anything else. According to Rav Moshe, davening does not play a special role in terms of mechitza. If you look at the sources, it's from a Levaya Gor, from Asad Lavo, and it's from Beis HaShoeva. It seems to me, however, we find that this is not accepted. I'll give you an example. In many shuls, including Shtiblach and Shuls of Yireim and Shleimim, there exists a custom that, for example, they have a coffin, Simchas Torah, there's a curtain, they pull the curtain. Wherever I was, and I was in many different places, this is always the custom. I was told, mind you, that some years back, in a large yeshiva whose name I will not mention, the came Simchas Torah through a yeshiva, so they said, you know, pull the curtain, like it was done in that yeshiva, in that city in America, and it was done that way in Lithuania, and there was these young Turks, and the young Turks wouldn't allow it. And there was Shiva, as a man, you know, 70 years old, and he wasn't able to have his way. So what's it based on? At first glance, the young Turks are right. If you follow Rav Moshe's logic, on the contrary, Simchas Torah is worse, it's just left, people are drinking, and it's worse. It seems to me from the Minhag Yisrael, and you've noticed, I'm always trying to justify Minhag, whether we accept or don't accept, we try to find some justification for it. It's based on an assumption that davening, in fact, does have a special chumrah, a special stringency above and beyond in a general form of shul. There are many shuls where they have lectures, you know, either sitting together or two sides of the aisle, you know, during the week or something like that. Whereas for davening, they have a mechitz. As a matter of fact, there are more as an expression in Hilchos Shabbos, where he says that they put up a mechitz on Shabbos between men and women for the drasha, the pnei atznius. It's not considered a halachic mechitz to bring it on Shabbos. It's tznius. And it could be that there's a separate halach with respect to davening. That's what I deduce from the Minhag Yisrael. And further, I have to admit that doing a little bit of history, I came to my attention that until recently, all the mechitzas were either in galleries, which means balconies, which is the traditional mechitza. Shuls, the women were in the back, but they couldn't make a full gallery where they had it in the back. In all those cases, I mean, you can see, a man can see if he looks up, if he turns around, but he's not going to see the general line of sight. So it seems to me, again, I'm not passing for sure, that the preferred way of making a mechitza, again, certainly not going to come to second guess shuls which were built at the time and they didn't want to have any mechitza. And there are many such shuls in many communities. It seems the preferred way of making a mechitza would be in a situation where the man in his line of sight should not have women in his line of sight. Should not be able to see the women while he's davening. Now, for that reason, if a person is davening in a shul where this is not accomplished, but there is a mechitza, which is a kosher quote to Rav Moshe, to recommend that, just sit in the front. That's all. Sit in the front. And even if, let's say, for example, on the side is a glass mechitza or some other mechitza which you can see over, but I'm not turning around doing that one. We're not going to turn around in front and look forward. But if you sit in the back of the shul and there's glass on the side, you know, you can't help but see. So I, for one, feel that it's a problem. And let me take another opinion, a woman's opinion. I'm not going to quote the woman by name, but there are women who feel very... her, plus it was good for her, otherwise he'd be going to jail. His life was threatened otherwise. And he went against his nature. That's a cue to finish. I'm finished. Okay. But against his nature, and he ran away. And therefore, Mida connected Mida, the sea went against its nature and split. From this we see that it's natural to become involved in inappropriate activities in this area, which we've been discussing for the last 4 years. What we have to do is, in effect, almost bordering on supernatural, to try to establish proper halakhic restrictions to enable us to conduct ourselves properly. And it's my tefillah that through this series of shiurim, we should be enabled to reach a one step or many steps higher on the ladder of sanctity, of kedoshim tiyu. Kedoshim tiyu ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokecha. Which in our attempt of imitatio dei, of trying to emulate the Rabbanu Shel Olam, this certainly plays a key and pivotal role. I hope that we will in fact become the Am Kadosh, the holy nation, and if we become the Am Kadosh, through this we'll be privileged to see the Gula Shlema, the Meher of Yameinu Am.